Wow, Mel is in the room, the podcast room. She is here in person.
Will she say anything, though?
Physically in the room.
No.
Yet being weirdly quiet.
You're being weirdly weird.
Ah, oh, we got her voice on,
hey,
on recording. Yes,
registered.
Finally, you are real. I'm going to go.
I don't know what you spilled.
Well, we might. Whoa. We might spill something.
That's a lot of paper towel.
You
didn't specify the amount.
There
you
go.
I'm all set. Are you going to throw up when you drink this?
I'm actually going to.
It's possible. Unlikely. Well, okay, I shouldn't even say unlikely. Mike has left the studio for some reason. He went to go get something. I am holding a box. I'm holding it up, I guess, so my beautiful wife can take a picture of me with the box. It's a shiny red box. It's lovely.
You look drunk already.
I'm not. What this is, a thing from, is this Hong Kong? Yeah, or Hongjin. I don't know if that's a company name. Imported by ingredients, Chinese sorghum and water. That's what's in here.
Okay.
Now, sorghum is a grass. It's a grass that's used as a grain in a lot of countries, including China, apparently.
Apparently.
So this is an extremely potent grain alcohol.
What is it? How strong is it?
Extremely strong.
Okay, just making sure.
I think I told you. Do you want to guess at what the proof is? The percentage?
Like 55?
Yeah, it is 56%, which 56%. Is 112 proof.
That's ridiculous.
It's absurdly strong. This is the Red Star one, which, as I've read, the brand is Red Star or something like that. There's a Red Star in the box. It's supposed to be one of the most popular brands of this.
Doesn't make
China.
It good.
Doesn't make it good.
I see there's some very fancy looking, like, certificate-looking,
sort of,
like, labels on it.
Yeah, very official-looking sealage across the lid.
Yeah, it's got
here,
sealage.
Which I'm going to break right now.
Do you want a knife?
Probably going to break some sort of...
Use your powerful man muscles.
Yeah, I do, actually. These things are tough.
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
What?
No. Right, you take that. I'm afraid for my life here. There we go. And you just, you cut the cardboard. Do you want to try to actually cut the...
The knife's too
You're
sharp.
You're really good at this.
Oh
what
God,
the
hell?
Huh? What is up with this? There's something weird with the box.
Oh, wait. Well, I guess we can't have any.
Why don't you just do this, Mike?
All right. Now we're basically destroying the box now. To get
but
into
there's
it.
A there's a thing here.
Mangling
it's meant
it.
To be open like All that. Right. It was meant to be open that way, see?
A lot of shininess in here. There's little gold.
There is more foil on this than a 90s X-Men limited run comic book.
And the inside is all
you feel me?
Is all red stars. It's
oh, look at that.
Red star
They've
print.
Got a theme and they're sticking to it. Whoa,
here
that is much smaller than I thought it would
it's
be.
It's a little smaller than the wine bottle. This is a 500 milliliter.
But the box is... Okay. Someone's trying to compensate.
It is clear... That this is dangerous. No, it is literally clear.
I think your wife's trying to get a picture of it.
Okay, there you go.
I think it has directions on the top.
Drink here.
All right, you're getting a picture. So this is specifically a Hongjin Ergo Tao. Is that how you pronounce that?
Sure. Well, she's so Chinese. What are you, racist?
You
good
seem
comeback.
Confident
we'll allow
about,
it.
You
Japanese
seem...
and Chinese are not the same.
Okay.
I think it's Hongxin.
Hongxin.
Remember that PSA from the 90s? Japanese and Chinese are not the same.
All right. Well, this label's going bye-bye because it's in the way.
I think it's trying to tell you shouldn't drink this.
It's one last effort to save our
so
lives.
So this is a very popular drink, and this is a very popular version of that drink, brand, label,
so this is
whatever.
A very, very popular drink.
Yeah. The Chinese apparently like to drink this at special occasions, or
when they
want to
get
drunk. When they want to get drunk, because it appears to be a very efficient way of doing
it. I imagine that when you've been attacked by those giant Chinese hornets that disintegrate your skin,
plastic.
You drink this before you die.
It's like a weird plastic seal on that.
Oh, that's weird.
I don't know what they're doing here.
LCBO says it's safe.
Yeah, this is from, we picked this up in Toronto, by the way.
Can we get a whiff?
What's going on there?
Probably trying to keep you from...
Is this something I need to remove?
No, it's got a built-in pour limiter.
You think so?
Yes.
All right, you pour it then.
Okay.
I'm confused by it.
Fragrant?
Not really. Not much, because good lord, this is strong.
Is that good?
Sure.
Don't drop open fire into this glass.
Oh, there we go.
Who's going first?
Mm.
Ooh,
take a little whiff of this.
Oh, that smells it smells like shochu. It just reminds me of shochu.
It's kind of like a strong version of shochu.
And
apparently,
that's saying something, because shochu's
a little stiff.
Who's first?
I think Spike really wants me to go. He's like leaning back, looking like,
go. I can go first.
Okay.
All right. So, there's a lot in here.
Is there more than in here?
Nah, it's about the same, I think. All right.
All right. So I don't know if Spike explained that. Did you explain about the taking a picture?
Yeah, apparently it's a thing. I didn't explain that.
No.
You can explain.
So apparently it's
I'm
a thing
preparing...
to take a picture of people during the first sip of this liquor, because it is so strong that apparently it elicits very interesting and or humorous facial expressions.
It has like a really thick smell to it. No.
Stop putting it off and just drink it.
Oh, God.
So what we just saw was a two-stage facial reaction. There was the initial, this is bad, but not too bad. And then there was a slight delay of about half a second. And then the real reaction hit.
Oh, man.
And it really hits Mike hard.
Go ahead. I'm not going to talk about it until you do it. Wait, okay.
Smile for the camera. Drink it.
Really?
Oh, you're no fun.
It's not that big a deal. Seriously, that?
At least...
Oh, do you want me to like fake it? Okay, here, get another picture.
All right, no. You can give an honest reaction.
It's not that big a deal. It's just really strong. It burns.
It was really strong. It was the flavor hit me, and then the extreme burn going down was the second reaction.
You bought me that cask strength pot still stuff.
Well, you apparently thrive on this
of
thing.
Yeah, I'm like Superman with the sun.
You built up a tolerance.
Yes, I have.
All right, it's interesting. Yeah. It's not horrible. I was expecting much worse, honestly.
Yeah, I think this has been vastly overblown in terms of its horribleness. Not its strength. It's definitely strong shit.
It's not great.
We still have one of those sip sodas of yours upstairs. We can maybe...
No.
No, yeah. I mean drink that afterwards as a chaser.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that I would not try mixing that.
Oh, no. I wouldn't mix anything with this. Except my stomach acid.
I would consider possibly mixing that honey liqueur with this just to see if that could take it on.
The funny thing is the honey liqueur would water this down.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that might actually work. You're right.
Another time, perhaps.
Or never. Maybe we'll just let it exist as a hypothetical thought and move on from there. Ladies, would either of you like to take a taste?
No.
Oh, Erica looks like she wants to.
Yes, she does.
She wants to.
Here you go, baby.
All right, get the camera
out. Mel, get that camera ready.
You might not react at all.
It's strong. It doesn't have that strong a flavor.
Remember shochu? I love shochu.
Yeah, okay. I think we're the crossies are just hardcore drinking people.
A little face there.
It's just strong. Oh.
It's Bernie.
It's a little Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. We're feeling the burn.
I guess this is a sipping drink because I can't imagine taking a big.
So I'll finish it in 2 minutes. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Can we come back down and check on you guys and make sure you're still alive in like another half an hour?
I think we'll be all right.
Maybe we should ring up a string and a bell. If you don't hear us ding it periodically, you get worried.
Yeah. Well, have fun.
Thanks, ladies.
Bye.
Thanks for joining the podcast, Melinda. Can you shut the door?
I can.
Thank you. You've captured your wife.
Another thing I read about, an interesting thing about this drink.
Are you drunk already?
No. Is it's a a tradition in China when you're celebrating. I forget what the word is. There's like a word that's like toast or something.
Okay.
And when you say that, the person that you're saying it to is supposed to drink, or people you're saying that to. So
it's not kanpai.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Chinese version of that, but it's not that. So it's kind of one of those things that like, oh, somebody said that, I have to drink now.
So it's like a frat guy drinking game?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So when they're at a wedding...
My wife is sneaking in and grabbing something and sneaking out. Bye.
And the door closed. So at a wedding, people will always be coming up to the groom and saying that whatever it is and making the groom drink.
That's not cool.
That's the way it works. All right. So to compensate for that, the best man at the wedding will typically have one of these bottles filled with water.
Okay, that makes sense.
So people think that he's drinking, but he's not, because he doesn't want to die.
Because this is completely, I mean, this looks like water.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's got legs.
It is viscous. But color-wise, if you weren't like 2 feet away from my glass right now.
Yeah.
Because we're having sex. you really wouldn't be able to tell this from water.
There we go. Ergo tu, or ergao tau, or something like that.
Etu brute?
Yeah.
It almost has a taste I don't like. I will be honest. Ugh. It's the sorghum, apparently.
I guess.
But the back end, I don't mind.
It's got a weird sweetness to it.
Yeah, sorghum must be strange.
Yeah.
I'll let it bite me more.
Yeah, it's like lawn clippings or something.
Hey,
it has a lawn clipping aftertaste.
Hey, neighbor, I just bagged all this mulched grass. What should we do? let's
make some sorghum.
Make some booze out of it. This is China. We can do whatever we want. There's no laws here.
All right.
So you have something important.
We didn't bring any water down, did we?
Oh, I did. I already have a glass ready to go.
Oh, good for you.
No, we'll take a break and go get that soda to wash this down.
All right.
Or you can take it with you and get some water. Do you want some water?
Let's just talk for a little bit.
Okay.
I'll work with the flavor in my mouth. It'll add something. I don't know
what. Hope you just start to make weird faces periodically.
And so I said, nah. And then it was...
Are you having a... Chinese fire water. Right.
Chinese jet fuel is what they call it.
Oh, jet fuel.
I think I mistakenly said fire water at one point.
And I gotta admit,
caught on.
Chinese fire water is catchier than Chinese jet fuel.
But jet fuel is much more appropriate.
I still think that, for me, the most jet fueliest thing I ever drank was grappa. Like pure grappa, not flavored grappa.
Not the stuff that you had me try.
No, that was chamomile grappa.
Okay. That wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't, because the chamomile softened and gave it some flavor.
Okay.
But like pure grappa is just twigs. So you're drinking, you're like, this is not meant to be drunk. Of course, Uncle Gino made this, because this is not something anyone but a drunk Italian would make. So you have important intellectual stuff to talk about, and I have to geek out.
Okay.
So
who's first? You want intellectual stuff or geeking out?
Let's go intellectual.
All right.
I did do some homework.
You did? Oh,
at your request.
Well, awesome.
That's little, awesome. But enough for talking
enough
points.
Enough to know what I'm talking about and to have an opinion here. So, I've been watching this guy.
Take a stop.
Yeah.
Start with status in improv.
Start with status.
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are.
That's Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Crossing. We are 15 minutes into the podcast and just introducing ourselves. Okay.
We've been talking about some drinky drink here, and now it's time to get a little serious and talk about some improv.
Yeah, which is going to pave the way to even more serious shit.
Yes. So, there's this guy, Keith Johnstone. May have heard of him, maybe not. If you've done any amount of improv, you probably have heard of him.
I wouldn't go that far.
All right, you should have heard
of him. In my New York days, I knew plenty of people who worshipped the font of Del Close, but had never heard of Johnstone.
That's insane to me. But I mean, you're... even John, even like Del Close would be like, John Stone's the man.
Yeah, but you're old school improv. I'm borderline old school improv. The kids, the millennials in the New York schools are, you know, they know Amy Poehler. Like, they have a very specific view of what improv is. You know what I mean? So.
Well, even though I was like doing festivals in the 90s or whatever.
Give me more?
Hmm? You want some more?
Yeah, why not?
Ugh. Knock yourself out.
That's the plan.
Literally. So, Impro is this book that Mr. Johnstone wrote, and I believe it came out in the 70s?
I think you're right.
Sometime in the 70s. And there wasn't really a lot of discussion or talk about improv at all.
Was that when the group was around?
I mean, like the Compass Players?
Weren't they called the group?
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
I think it's the same people. They had a couple different names.
Okay.
Group Theater?
I don't know. You're talking about Chicago stuff, right?
Yeah, but it was the infancy of improv in general, like anywhere.
Yes.
I mean, obviously it came from Commedia dell'arte. It's a very old art, but like,
yeah.
Improv as we know it now, it was nascent at that point.
Yes, and Keith Johnstone was kind of one of the earliest progenitors, the people who wrote about it and, you know, played around with it and looked at it as an art form or as a valuable tool.
And the way he got into it is very interesting. And I've always enjoyed this, being a corporate trainer now, because he was trying to be a British school teacher.
Yes.
And he came across improv as he struggled with the inexorable crushing weight and loss of creativity that comes with the British higher education system.
Yes.
And he rediscovered his creativity through play.
Right.
And with the effect that education had on children and their creativity, how it crushed it. And that gave birth to this. So I've always found that very interesting. The origins of how Johnstone came to improv are very cool.
Yes. And so many things after Johnstone were borrowed heavily from his writing and mm-hmm. his theater groups. Hugely influential person in the world of improv.
He created comedy sports, which is like the most licensed improv format ever.
Yes.
Possibly also the most
widely ripped off.
Also a fairly litigious format.
Yeah.
You're a certain equity house in Rochester. Go on.
Yeah. Anyway. Among the various concepts that he talked about,
mm-hmm.
one was, he spent a lot of time talking about, is something called status. And it's what he observed as the way humans kind of, for lack of a better term, size each other up.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet somebody or you have any sort of interaction with another person, there's what Johnstone would call a status transaction.
Can I give an example I used to use in my soft skills?
Please
so
do.
When I was teaching the extension of the soft skills workshop that we created,
yes,
when they stopped paying us and just made me do it as a job, which was smart of them.
Yeah.
I would always use this example because I was still closer to living in New York City. You run into a status exchange fairly often on the streets in New York City where there's a lot of people walking. And I would see this a lot when you'd have like younger, wealthy broker walking on the sidewalk and in the opposite direction of an older person.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of those culturally have ascribed status to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would often see the dance. The I'm not going to move. Well, I'm not going to move. And then they kind of walk into each other and then do that weird dance where you're like, well, I'll go left and then they go left and then you go right and then I go right. You know that.
And they're both very irritated about it.
Extremely irritated because they're both very important people. But yeah, so that if you've ever done the dance with someone, you're actually having a status conflict because unless they're foreign, do you have a certain place to walk in the sidewalk in America?
Yeah.
You know, sorry, just an example.
So, and a couple of important things about status transactions, they happen all the time, every time people encounter other people.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't pay any attention to them. There's something that happens very, very naturally. And I would say kind of on like an animal level.
Yep.
And you actually see animals do this sort of stuff too.
Yeah. Oh, this is very, very pervasive.
But yeah, we don't notice it. We don't say, oh, that's what that thing was that person just did.
Correct.
Unless you're us.
In which case,
and unless you're Keith Johnstone or you know, other people who've done improv and have specifically studied status and how it works, and say, oh, okay, I see what that thing was that person did. That was a status thing. Got it. And once you know what to look for, it becomes very, very clear.
It's everywhere. Very obvious. It's yeah. distractingly obvious.
Yes. And I don't know, I can't speak for you, but I kind of have to turn that off. I have to turn off the part of my brain that notices things like that.
I successfully turned that off more or less permanently when I gave up acting. Like, I was able to say, I'm done. But I was always very annoyed with myself that I tended to play a high status character. Okay. In a lot of my improv, that always bugged me because I knew that it was like a personal thing.
Right. And that's another element of status, is every person has a status level that they tend towards.
I know. I'm underhanding your topic for
you. Thank you. Thank you for that lovely softball. So everybody tends to somewhere on the low or high status scale. There's no neutral. There just isn't.
I've not
seen that. If there is, I have not encountered it. Johnstone was pretty clear in saying that there's no such thing as a neutral status.
There are serial evaders, but even they have to adopt a status of some kind to evade conflict. You ever seen one of those people? Or like, they'll just agree with everything or adopt whatever they do in a situation to avoid having an exchange that's conflicting.
Yes.
But that's still not quite neutral. Yes. So yeah, I would agree. And they tell you, I mean, one of the earlier things in improv, or at least Keith Johnstone's improv, when I learned it, was it's very boring to watch two equal statuses.
Yes.
So master-servant is a very old status exchange, Shakespeare and older, commedia arte, and
right.
The comedy of that has to do with the two different levels.
And why this is important for actors to know, and especially improv people to know, is that it's a language. It's a nonverbal language, and audiences will pick up on it.
Yes, they won't know why, but they will.
They'll be like, "Oh, I see what they're doing. That's cool. I don't know what it was. I mean, they don't even wonder what it is. They just get it."
I think it makes it feel real to them.
Yeah,
there's something. There's truth. There's something truth in comedy. There's something truthful about it that, on some level, they're like, "Got it."
Yes, and another reason for an actor to understand and know what how these status signals and transactions work is, as you were saying, and we were both kind of saying, everybody has a set status that they tend towards, that they gravitate towards. And you need to know what that is, because you don't want to be like a low status King Richard III or something.
Really would not fly very
well. That would be just weird.
You'd be making it really hard on yourself.
Yeah. You know, likewise, you don't want to be giving off these status signals that are inappropriate for a character you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time people do. That are not really
trained.
Actors that are not trained in this. Yeah. You know, like that was just a weird performance.
It was a weird choice.
Yes. It was an interesting choice.
It was an interesting choice. Oh, how'd you like my performance? It was an interesting choice. Oh, sandwich bar.
So, pretty clearly, you tend towards high status. You're comfortable in that. You're comfortable, and you are. It's okay. It's not a negative thing.
It is, though, because I know why I do it, and I know that I can't turn it off very easily.
Okay.
So this is that insight I've gained over the years after walking away from acting.
Okay, I am intentionally not assigning any moral value here. I'm not saying that high status is any real way better than a low status.
I don't consciously do it for any particular reason. I don't consciously do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens. No, it is who I am. It is inextricably linked to who I am,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. So, and everyone has a status. I would say you tend to more lower status.
Yes, definitely.
So, and there's nothing wrong or right about that. It's just, it's where you're at in your life.
Yes. So
yeah.
And the other part about when you get into it, when you're studying it, there are certain like really specific moves and body language and even like vocal things that you learn, oh, okay, what, like one of my favorite ones is like patting someone else on the head. That's a very, very aggressive, high status move.
Super aggressive. Not something a
normal person. It doesn't sound like patting someone on the head. That really? But yeah.
Super aggressive.
And when somebody does that to you, even if you're not trained, especially if you're not trained in this, you feel it. Mm-hmm. It like you're like, we bastard, why did you just do that to me?
You fucker. Dude?
Fuck you. You get that reaction. You would get that reaction a little bit if I did it right now, so I'm not going to.
Given my high status tendencies, yeah, definitely. What the fuck, dude? Because I know you're low status. It's like, don't reverse this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I pat you. You don't pat me.
And you know, it that works as a high status move because it's an invasion of your personal space, for mm-hmm. one thing. And it's... I'm going to get to the secret here.
Ooh.
The secret of status.
Oh, not the book, The Secret.
No. Oh, jeez. No.
I was all excited. I was like,
I
never read it.
I'm already married, Mike. No.
Wait, what?
Isn't that the one where you like, it's all about getting, oh no, that's something else.
You're talking about the pickup artist thing.
No, the one where like the women have to do all this to get the ring.
No, the secret is that whole thing with the Rosicrucians and the,
that's something
the positive
else.
Thinking okay. Makes the universe give you what you want. So if I really think I'm going to get a Bentley Continental GT, I'm going to get it.
Yeah, you're not. That's the secret. The secret is you're not.
The secret is this is all bullshit.
Yeah, not gonna happen. But thank you for buying my book. That's the secret.
Secret.
So the secret of status is all of these moves, all of these high status and low status moves, can be broken down into two things.
Ooh. One.
Well, really, just one thing, and it's controlling focus.
Okay.
Mostly visual focus.
Okay.
So a high status move is either going to be one of two things. It's going to be look at me mm-hmm. or look at you. Now you're thinking about that for a second.
Yeah.
So if I'm making a high status move, one of these obviously is look at me. I'm going to take up a lot of space. I'm going to stand out from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is I'm going to tell everybody to look at
you. So you're directing the audience.
Gotcha. I'm directing that focus.
Okay.
Look at this guy.
This guy.
Look at what? What is this guy? Who are you? Who do you think you are?
You're going to pat me on the head now.
I'm not going to. And I know this is really hard to come across, to have this come across making any sort of sense just by just having the audio and no visual stuff.
I know, but if you're listening to this and this isn't really making sense, the next time you are observing two friends' conversation, this is how I try to tell people, take a step back from it. Divorce yourself from the fact that you know them, you know their personality types, and just watch physically the little things they're doing to interact. Because there is a ton of physicality to an everyday interaction that we don't normally make note of.
Let me just run through a few things. High status takes up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. They're comfortable having people look at them. They will take up more of the furniture. They'll be more open. You're kind of open, but you're a little.
Well, I have an arm. No, you know the most high status stance you can have, right?
What
is the cowboy stance?
What's that like?
So you put your thumbs in your belt loops and you stand.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, with your stomach sticking out. Do you know why?
You do a man spread there.
The man spread. Do you know why the man spread is the most confident stance you can take?
Tell me.
Because it exposes every vital organ from your heart all the way down to your genitalia. Some psychologist said this one. So this stance is literally saying, I am so not threatened by anyone in my presence that I am exposing every single vital organ and vulnerable spot. And I'm not fearful of you. And I'm hooking my thumbs in my belt loops.
Mm-hmm.
So that I am slowing myself down from being able to defend myself because I do not sense a threat. But that's like animal brain shit right there.
Yeah. And again, I would put that under definitely under the look at me. Look at how not
afraid. Oh, no, in every way. It's a spread out. It takes up a lot of space. And there's a lot of high status to that.
Low status is really the opposite. Low status things are breaking eye contact. Looking away from someone. High status obviously is keeping eye contact, you know, staring someone down. Another low status thing is just any sort of unnecessary movement, involuntary movement, fidgeting, twitching, shifting your weight. That and what these signals do is they tell people, don't look at me. They're like, I don't want you to look at me. You're not going to see anything good here. And when we did some of our status exercises, we would actually have things like, okay, I have two people go up and see who could be the lower status or who could be the higher status. The higher ones were generally more interesting. Actually, they were always more interesting.
Yeah.
Because the low status would really just devolve to, I don't want to look at these people. It's making me uncomfortable. I don't want to see you guys anymore. You're done.
Stop. Scene.
Yeah. Going fetal is pretty low status.
It's the ultimate low status.
Yes. So I think people probably have a rough idea about this. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, I'm going to plug this.
Mm.
Because I got some time before this actually rolls out. There will be a paper that an article, I guess, that I'm going to write.
A scholarly thesis.
Sure. Whatever. And we'll have some sort of link to it on the podcast. So you can look at it, and I've got a couple of videos and some more information that you can check out about
this. You give me that shit and I will link the hell out of it.
So you can look at that after we're talking, or you can take a break and look at that right now.
Stop right now and watch the link.
So this brings us to our man, this guy, this dude.
The one, the only.
The one, the only, the incomparable.
Incomprehensible.
DJT, and I'm talking Donald J. Trump.
DJT.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So it occurred to me pretty recently that after watching him, everything he does is high, super high, crazy high,
comically high
status moves all the time, 24/7, probably in his sleep. He sleeps
high status.
Everything he does is some sort of high status move. It's high status plays all the time. You can watch one of the debates and it's textbook. This is what somebody who can't stop making high status moves looks like. And I think that even he's managed to take it from his physical presence to Twitter to just the universe.
It's permeated his being, but it shouldn't be it's a caricature. It shouldn't be possible in the real world to maintain that.
It shouldn't.
Without being a fucking sociopath.
Yes.
Which maybe it isn't possible without being a sociopath.
Yeah. It's disturbing because, and I'm not really, I'm not going to say he's really good at it because it's more of a case is I don't think he can turn it off.
Yeah, I know. I think you're right. I don't think he has a choice at this point.
People with a high EQ can adjust their status. You can go into a room and not make people uncomfortable. You can adjust to other people. People with high the emotional IQ have that ability. You have that ability.
Yes. You could think of it as being extremely manipulative if you wanted to.
That's one way to look at it.
I thought that's where you're going. Okay.
It's not where I'm going.
Okay.
It's a sign of skill, of that EQ, of being able to deal with other humans well.
And what's interesting
interpersonally,
about it, when I read about EQ, what was interesting was what it really comes down to is your ability to subconsciously, because it's too much to do it consciously.
Oh, yeah.
But for the most part, subconsciously read a person by all of their little tells, all of the little physical and tonal and cadence, all the little ways that they are communicating their current state of mind and state of being.
Okay. I think you can go about it consciously too, but that's another
difference. I think to a certain degree, Well, that comes down to the manipulation or not. What are you doing at that moment? But okay, I see that.
Okay, so I think Donald Trump comes off as weirdly not quite human because he can't adjust to other. He doesn't have the EQ where he can adjust his own.
He's in orbit. He can't come down from his status.
Yeah.
He's stuck there.
Yes.
And it's not healthy.
You can speculate on how that happened. Probably just, you know, a life of being rich and relatively powerful and not having any tolerance for people who say no to you.
And it just sort of becomes a feedback loop. Fortunes and then just make them back. Yeah. I mean, yeah. What a weird existence to have.
So, yeah, that's kind of his thing. It is not a little thing for him. It's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you actually looked at some video maybe, or.
Yeah. I took some mental notes. So a couple things. So one, he uses very sharp, aggressive hand motions.
Yes.
Like what I termed in my head was the karate chop.
Yes.
He's a big fan of the karate chop.
Yeah. And what he does, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that the high size version of that is to leave that out there.
To make doesn't just chop and then go away.
Right. Because if you do that, that's a lower status move. You want to make a gesture and then leave it out there.
Well, if you pull it away, it's borderline fidget.
Yes.
If you leave it out there, it's aggressive
statement. I meant to put this here, right. And I'm not taking it away,
I cut the air, and now I'm leaving my presence here. Another interesting thing, and actually this, and I had noticed this, and it was really funny when I was watching it, and it was bizarre. So what I did was I watched I watched a very short piece of his very long RNC address. And I noticed that he is so unwilling to share focus.
Yeah. There you go.
And here's the thing. So when you are on, and this is something you just learn as an actor when you do camera acting. When you look at something and you have a camera close up on your face, you instantly run the risk of people wanting to know what you're looking at. It's telegraphed that you're looking at something. And part of that, to accentuate that, is, and you'll see this in the, and think of the dramatic chipmunk.
Mm.
The dramatic chipmunk turns like its body and head.
Mm-hmm.
Like two separate things. It's like, dan, 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 and you think the whip take thing where it's like, what's over there? What horror movie moment? What Donald Trump did that I was just laughing when I watched was he wouldn't separate the movement of his head from his body. So what he did was he turned his shoulders and head together. So when he addressed the audience, he was so unwilling to let you wonder what he was looking at that what he did was he addressed this part of the room. And then exactly what I'm doing now, one movement like a tank, this part of the room, and then back. And he kept going back and forth, and it was the weirdest fucking thing. And I'm like, who the fuck moves like that?
Just, and it's weird. It's high status because it doesn't look like there's any unintentionalness or any fidgeting there.
There's nothing is taking his focus away. He is 100% in control of his body and his focus, but it looked bizarre.
Yeah.
Also, he does the it's a good pizza pie hand gesture. You know what I mean? The A-OK hand gesture, this. He did this. So he put his finger and thumb, or his forefinger thumb together and the other three fingers up.
And it's like way up though, right?
Way up. And he would do that aggressive cut move and then leave it out there, which looked ridiculous when you stop and look at it. Because it is it's like you're giving a hand job to a pole. And then you're tickling a flag rope on the side. It was the weirdest thing.
What I watched was one of the debates, which I only watched like the first minute or two of it.
Mm.
That was enough.
I can't watch a lot of it. Yeah, any rational
human. And it was him and Rubio. And Rubio is trying to fight. I had the sound down because I didn't care what they were saying. Mm-hmm. I was watching what they were doing.
I think it's probably better with the sound down.
You can really see with the sound down. Yeah. And Rubio was like trying, but he just couldn't handle it.
Was this before he started being silly, Rubio, at the end?
Maybe. I don't know.
Was he even trying to actually debate with Trump?
Yeah, he was standing. They're actually positioned pretty closely. And I almost want to say that must have been something Trump did to get them as close. But I could be, that is just complete guesswork on my own.
Conjecture.
Because Trump was doing things like he would reach out and be getting his hands right in space, Rubio's space. And Rubio was just like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then he tried to fight back. You know, he tried to make some high status moves, but they weren't happening. And he eventually, like any normal human would just sort of back down and like look away and like shrug and What that does is it tells the people who are watching on that animal subconscious level that Trump is the superior creature out there.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what so many people are responding to.
It's about power. Erica listened to a podcast about people supporting Trump who would never in a million years gain from his presidency.
Yeah.
And one of them who's like a poor African-American kid in the ghetto. I mean, talk about someone who should not be supporting Trump. But
they see it. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, they asked him and he very, you know, eloquently was like, it's about its power, its control, its stature. This guy, you know, and I'm totally prepared. I didn't hear it, but this is how she conveyed it. It's just about this is a motherfucker who's in charge, you know? I mean, that's what people say when they see him is that the guy knows what he's fucking knows what he's doing. And this brings me to the conversation my wife and I had with my mother-in-law, like not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
When out of nowhere, you know, we, with the religious stuff, we don't bring up politics, right. You know. But out of nowhere, I mean, I think I said something that may somehow have been related to something political. And she goes, yeah, it's like it's with that, you know, I just don't trust that Hillary Clinton, but that Donald Trump, I mean, he tells the truth. I've had two servings of this already.
Yeah, good for you.
Sorry. But, you know, and then I couldn't let it go. I was just like, no.
Yeah.
But this ties to what you're saying. I was very calm. I was like, he does not tell the truth. And Erica was like, Mom, he is a liar. And just took her aback. Like, she'd never fact-checked anything because, of course, it's not her wheelhouse. But what I said was, you have to understand that on a very basic level, there is a very big difference between saying something assertively and saying something true.
Yes.
And that animal brain that you're talking about has a very difficult time distinguishing between those two.
It really does. And that's just that the way we're wired is to respond positively to this.
That's why a demagogue is so dangerous. That's why people are afraid. That's why I am afraid of Trump. Because what he can do is appeal to the lower base aspects of people, and that circumvents rationality and thought. When you can attract the animal brain part of someone, you are bypassing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of years of evolution of higher thought processes.
And I don't know if he knows what he's doing. I mean, I don't know if he has any sort of conscious understanding of that this is how he gets people to listen to him.
I've thought about that, and I desperately want to think he doesn't. No, I'm serious. Because that means that he can be beaten. If he's just lucking out...
I think he can, because he can't turn it off. He can't stop it.
Well...
He doesn't know when to back off, like with the...
What's happening right now with the cons is fantastic. I feel awful for them. I'm hoping that, you know, they were properly vetted and told, listen, you have to understand you're going to fall under fire no matter how unthinkable that is. Speaking at the DNC about your son, you know, dying in the service of his country, you're still going to fall under fire. I hope to God someone said that to them. But what Trump has done is just, like, it is really going on the verge of too far. And the timing is really shitty.
He's definitely too far on this.
It's so shitty, the timing for him. Like, what a fucking moron. And that, you know, but that does make me think, yes, he is not in control of this power that he seems to have.
Mm-hmm.
But and it would keep me up at night if I thought he actually was consciously doing it. Because that is a dangerous person who could do that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's terrifyingly dangerous. I just don't think he's actually that smart.
And again, I want to stress that this isn't like bullshitty or woo or
no. There is tons of research.
There is
tons of research about this.
Yeah, this is all very very real.
Oh yeah, no, the concept of personal space and ownership. I mean, the patting on the head. It's about ownership as much as anything.
Yes. So going back to Mr. and Mrs. Khan.
Yeah.
One thing that they've kind of stumbled across is a weakness of his, mm-hmm. is how to counter aggressive high status with calm high status.
It's very powerful.
Yes.
I have a very personal experience with this that I'd like to share at some point, but go on.
Okay. So what he's doing, what Mr. and Mrs. Khan are doing is very calmly, when they talk to the media or when they, you know, write something, it's very like, you know, we weren't trying to do anything except say, you know, this is what happened to us. This is how we feel. It's our right as citizens to do this. Mm-hmm. And we object to some of the things that Mr. Trump here is doing. They're not acknowledging his status. They're not acknowledging, they're not really replying to him.
In kind.
They're not replying in kind. And they're not having that typical, they're not escalating it also.
Right. Well, they're, you know,
what shuts it down is not reacting to it.
They're in complete control. Yes. When I watch.
They're not rattled by him at all.
Not at all. And I will say that to their advantage, they have not had to be in the room with him.
Okay.
Because he is a charismatic. In that general sense of what the term acharismatic means.
Yeah.
And that has an effect on people because they have their own gravitational pull. So I think it's good that they have been kept out of his physical presence because then he could invade their you know, space and that kind of stuff.
Yes. So he's having trouble turning it around again to look at me, look at how awesome I am.
Trump bot cannot compute when someone else is in control of an interaction with him.
Right.
He can't do that.
And that's what is happening right now.
No, I
think in this situation.
Right. Yes. And it's again pulling or widening that division in his own party where people are like, dude, you can't say that. You can't fucking say that. And these are Republicans saying that.
So you want to tag something in there?
Yeah, just I had a personal experience in college, and I may have talked about this, but it was fascinating. It was a heady rush because it was such a power trip to be in control of the situation. My wife and I have an individual from college that we both still to this day despise. This is not a great person, not a great guy.
Okay.
And we actually completely independently of one another came to despise him. Nothing to do with reasons that each of us disliked him. We had completely different interactions. You each took your own
path
to despising this guy. Unfortunately, he was very good friends with one of my housemates or several of my housemates, which I question why that is, but... So he was very manipulative. He was a psychology major.
No.
And he relished tearing people down.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Just a pretty well comfortable Long Island guy. So, you know, wasn't someone who had something to prove as far as I could tell. But I left him alone in the room with my drunk friend Fred one day. Fred was a World War II aficionado. His grandfather fought in the war. Great good luck.
Okay.
It's like a young John Goodman. It's just a guy you like to be around, you know?
Okay.
I come back in the room and he's crying. And somehow in the 5 minutes I left him alone to fix us drinks, this guy had turned my friend Fred's love of World War II into him supporting the Axis powers. Seriously.
And he was crying?
He was drunk. And I wasn't in the room, so I kind of just got a blubbering story from Fred about it afterwards. But that was like the final straw of a long string of him being really shitty to female friends of mine. And just nibbling the fuck out of people. So I'd had enough. So there was a house party at our house. We were the party house for the theater people. Not the greatest claim in the world. It's not that impressive. But, you know, we had our big group of friends that would come party. And I'd had enough of this guy. So I positioned him. It was very deliberate. This was very deliberate. This is probably the most evil manipulative I've ever been in my life. So you'll relish this. This is the most Machiavellian or whatever.
And you're smiling so proudly.
I was a giant killer that night, Mike. So I positioned another housemate who was not a fan of him on the other side of him. So it was three of us on a couch, which is a bunch of people hanging out.
Okay. I know where this is going because there's actually an improv exercise that is this.
So I just let conversation happen. There was like 12 people in the room, you know, a mix of genders, and we're all just hanging out. And then I just turned to this guy and I'm like, hey, we're talking, leading him to where I need him to be in the conversation about women. And then I said, you know, by the way, dude, I've noticed that, you know, you talk a big game about your technique, but I've noticed it doesn't always work. So aggressive statement, right? Attacking.
Yes.
And it rattled him. Like, more than I could have hoped. Like, it fucking, like, if there was a record scratch, well, no, the record scratch moment happened later. So he just was like, Karasi, don't you fucking talk about my technique. Like, he was on the defensive and he got angry so
fast. And it was, from what you just said, you're turning around the focus. It's like, you're not the subject of your own story. You're something I am observing.
I have clinically studied you and found you lacking.
Yes.
Was exactly how it came across, which was exactly how I intended it to. So it was shitty of me to do this in an environment where he felt like he was comfortable and in control. So, you know, again, like this wasn't the nicest thing I've ever done in my life. So I had him on an even footing. I had him on the defensive. And he just starts kind of sputtering, trying to, because I was right. He had a couple of mishaps with women recently at that time. So I knew I was right. And so he tried to start to gain control again with, you know, his own thing. And then I started looking past him to my friend. And I gave him the look.
Oh.
You know the look. The slight eyebrow raise, like, slight head to, like, can you believe this?
Yes.
Full view of the guy. He was looking right at me.
Yes. And that's a heavy set. See, that's exactly what I'm saying. You're doing the look at this guy move.
It was a Trump move.
Yeah.
It was exactly the look at this guy. And my housemate knew exactly what I was doing, and he was all for it, because we were sick of this dude. So he just kind of, like, nodded, like, because this other guy wasn't even looking at him, so he's just like, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. I got it. He also studied improv. So, fortunately, we're not friends anymore, but it was an awesome tag team.
So, okay.
So I did this a couple times, and this rattled him, and it shook him so badly that he stood up and just started shouting at me. And then I employed the con maneuver. I just calmly sat there, 100% unshaken by someone in my own home shouting at me, standing above me, and maintained control of this, my status. And that was the record scratch moment. So everyone just stops and stares, and they see this guy shouting at me, and me just very calmly, beautifully sitting there taking it. And then when he paused to take a breath, I said, I think it's time you left my party. And he did. He lit one right out. But that was that point where I was so immersed in improv and I so understood status that I was able to engineer a situation. And it was a shitty thing to do. Don't get me wrong. I have reason to believe there was a lot going on with that guy that he had to work out in much later years, only recently. But yeah. So, but the con maneuver was the coup de grace.
Yes.
Even though I was seated in front of him and he was above me shouting, I was still completely in control of the situation.
Because you're not responding to it.
I was responding in a way that was dismissive. I was like, just calmly nodding at him shouting at me like, yeah, whatever. I'm not affected by this. It isn't about not responding. It's about not being affected. That's the one thing I would say.
It's the appearance of control.
Yes.
You appeared in control of the focus of that. And he appeared that he was
out of control. He was not out of control at all. Yeah.
And that's it. And that's
how you handle a Trump.
It is. So to Hillary,
stop telling lies for one thing.
Yeah, that would be so nice.
You could just stop lying. I get it. I get why. I don't even fault you because it's fucking American politics, but just stop lying. That's all I ask.
Yeah, it's irritating.
It's very
irritating. And no, I know she doesn't lie nearly as much as Trump. And it's
impossible
to
lie nearly as much as Trump.
It's an absurd comparison. She tells the truth most of the time, I think.
She's an American politician. That's like telling the truth all the time.
Okay. Seriously, if you go to the
Politifact or whatever.
Yeah, whatever the fact checker, Politifact. Yeah. She gets very high rating. She like, and Bernie are almost at the same level on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think she might actually be the tiniest bit. It's an irrelevant difference. And Trump is like the complete bottom right. Well,
but
he's always been.
He speaks with bluster and assertiveness, and that's
he speaks animal.
No, I think it's a great way
to
put
it. The truth is irrelevant. He speaks animal.
Yeah.
And the animal in people respond to that. So, Hillary, don't acknowledge him. Don't respond to him. If he tries to address you in a debate, talk about him in the third person. Do you have any other tips like that? So if you're talking about him instead of to him, that's a big move.
I find that smiling is a very powerful move when you're under attack. It sends a message that you not only anticipated this, but the person is playing into your hands.
Yes.
I think that she has a personality image issue. She is such a qualified, I don't care what anyone says, she's qualified to be president more than fucking most people have ever been president in this country. But she has a pretty shit personality, just in general, like part of being essentially a nerd and wanting desperately to be a public servant, which I laud that shit. I don't want to do it. Makes her just not a very, you know, just not good at parties.
Mm-hmm.
So she needs to pick some very specific techniques and master them. And I think for her, one of them would be that knowing smile. I think she has it already. And I think employing that with Trump would be a really powerful thing. No joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he starts spouting off that, like, you know, just a small nod and that smile is going to send so much confidence.
But not to him.
Not to him. To the camera, to the moderator.
Don't acknowledge him.
No.
He's not worth the time.
This guy.
Yeah, the
this
thumb, guy. The smile,
no,
and the thumb.
No thumb. She's above the thumb. She can't get away with the thumb. It's too much for her.
Okay.
He can get away with it. She couldn't do that. No, but it's the smile and nod. Maybe even a head nod towards him, but the thumb is too much for
okay.
her. So there's my.
Yeah. But what you can't do is look at him and then look back.
Right, because that kind of denotes fear or wariness.
She's got to be really, really, really careful about this. And I hope she's got somebody on her team that knows this stuff and is.
I don't doubt that the Democratic Party was rigging it in her favor. I really don't doubt that. And I don't even care. By the way, I meant to ask you, I saw you liked my rant on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
We hadn't talked about it, so...
It's stuff that we've been talking about on... and in the discussion boards that I frequent, so... Yeah.
But I did finally reach that point where I was like, do the Bernie supporters not understand that basically the best they could have hoped for they got? Like, is that... Then they need to get out of the fucking way. Like, why is that not something they understand?
Yeah.
Like, to me, Bernie has dredged up the liberal leftist equivalent of the Trump supporters. I really think that there's a very kindred spirit there.
Yeah, there's some similarity. I haven't really looked at them to his
I'm talking
stuff.
the far outskirts of their support base.
Okay, not talking about like the animal stuff. This is something.
No. I'm saying that the mental state of the people that he has appealed to, each of them has appealed to, like is so far outside that they start to come back around.
And he's got concessions. He's got a significant say in the Democratic Party.
He wouldn't endorse Hillary until he got everything that he wanted to get as president, but was never going to get. I don't care who the fuck you are. It wasn't going to happen. He got that into the platform.
Yeah.
He fucking won.
So his hopes and dreams, his plans,
his life
he
work.
Wants, that's all riding on Hillary now.
Right. We need Hillary to win. I want to say I don't understand why his people don't get that, but of course I understand. It's the same reason why Trump people are stupid. But
it's emotional. I'm not saying it's stupid. It's emotional.
Well, I think emotion makes you stupid.
Okay. It's poor judgment.
It's animal judgment.
Yeah.
Which is very binary and ill-informed. But I think that's a very interesting and very valid. Can I make one other thing I've noticed about Trump?
Yeah.
And this is actually, noticed it long before this, and I find it very interesting. I actually want to get your thoughts on this. Have you noticed he always says to discredit someone, and they don't know me, and he doesn't know me. I've never met the man. You ever noticed that?
Yeah.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
What do I make of that?
It's not a traditional status move in a purely traditional sense.
No.
I have some thoughts on it, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
It seems like hyper defensive. And it seems like whenever he gets to that, it's somebody who's hit a nerve with him.
Well, he did it with the Putin thing, even though he was lying, and it's been proven. He tends to do it when he's lying, I've noticed. Have you noticed that? It's generally when he says that, that someone can immediately say, well, he said in this interview 2 years ago that he knew this person.
Well, okay, yeah. Quite simply, it's him dismissing the discussion, that the whole discussion itself, and trying to redirect to a different topic. I think that's most of it.
I view it as his attempt, a very generally lame attempt, because I see it usually as one of his weakest moves, as an attempt to discredit the other person, And this really speaks to his ego.
Okay.
But in his mind, this is my theory. In his mind, if you have met Donald Trump, you understand Donald Trump. If you have not met Donald Trump, you cannot fathom Donald Trump. And therefore, you are discredited from being able to speak intelligently about Donald Trump if you have not met him. That is my theory. I've seen this, him say this enough times, and that is the context I've taken from it.
I don't know. I can't argue with that.
I'm not looking for an argument. I'm just saying that's my interpretation of it. It's bizarre.
It's an insane tactic.
It doesn't work very well. It tends to be one of his weakest tactics because it's an easy thing to disprove. Putin's never met me. He doesn't know me. Didn't you brag 2 years ago about being in a room with him? Like, dude, it's right here. It's public fucking record.
Well, he even used that against Mr. and Mrs. Khan.
Yep. And that's...
Yep. Which was... like, they can't criticize me. They've never met me.
That's what I'm saying.
And it doesn't make any sort of sense. It
makes no sense. But it's... I see it as a discrediting move. Well, they can't... They haven't met me, so
they don't know I haven't read the Constitution. They haven't met me.
They don't know me.
They don't know me. Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of a head scratcher for me.
But that speaks to his mental state.
Yes.
It's like you're saying, you like say this constantly and it doesn't really ever make sense when you say it, yet you still say it.
Yeah.
What's up with that? But I think I look forward to reading your article. I think it's.
I look forward to finishing it.
I look forward to starting.
Hopefully, I'll have it done before this podcast comes out. did you want to do anything nerdy, or are we out of time?
We are close to time, but I really, 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 really need to plug Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
Did you see that I tagged you on Facebook today?
Yes, I saw that. I'm in. I'm
okay. Because you do this thing where you read reviews, and the early reviews for Stranger Things. We're judging the first couple episodes, and it was like, oh, it's 80s nostalgia. And then if you read the reviews that came out a little bit later, or those same reviewers who went back afterwards, they were like, oh, that's what they were doing. It was one of those kind of things. So I just need you to understand. I need everyone to understand that Stranger Things is a brilliant, in its flaws, nostalgic 80s throwback that is Stephen King's It meets Goonies. That's, I think, a very fair way of describing it. And then it turns into fucking Silent Hill.
Right. And Stephen King likes it, apparently.
Oh, yeah? Well, yeah. He fucking better. I mean, they hired a company to, like, recreate his style of font with all the cinematic, like, grain errors in the film and stuff. The credit scene is amazing.
Huh.
But I just got to gush. I have to. Okay. Go. I can't help
well,
it.
Well, I do. I'm not
going to ruin anything. I know.
I see it. I will see it. I promise.
It's extremely influenced by Silent Hill. They've said that in an interview.
Mm-hmm.
So like I could just pick, I have a list in my head of all the things that are Silent Hill-esque about it.
Okay.
Which of course.
All right. So stop.
For me, it makes me very happy. But it's really driven by the kids. And they got these are like 12-year-olds. They got some incredibly good actors. Like you would think like the adults are carrying the show. It's not. It's the kids. And they're doing a really good job. And this one girl who plays 11, that's her name, she's a savant. And because Erica was like, this girl's amazing. Why is she so good? And I looked her up, and I guess it was like a super commodity in Hollywood recently. A top Hollywood talent agent went up to her parents and they said, your daughter has every natural gift that can't be taught like in one person. Like, I want to represent her. Like, and she is so good on that show. You're like, what? Winona Ryder's good. She's a little grating, but given the circumstances, it's understandable. the music, Netflix went all out on the rights for music, which you don't normally see. And that kind of throwback thing, like they fucking went all out. They spared no expense. So if there's an 80s song you like, it's probably on that show, which is nice. It's scary.
Okay.
We have a new rule. We can't watch it right before bed.
That's pretty... Erica... That sounds intimidating.
Erica, like...
Because you're not easily rattled by stuff.
No, I don't get scared by it, but I can't turn my mind off.
Oh, right. Okay.
Erica doesn't get scared by it directly, but like she had paranoid fears afterwards that she never gets that. I'll sit awake and imagine I heard a noise and then plan how I'm going to attack the person breaking into my home. She's like, when someone's rifling around in our bed. No, that never happened. But yeah, she was like, I can't watch the show anymore before bed. It's too scary.
Okay.
Which is great. But yeah, so it starts...
How many episodes have you watched?
Eight. Oh, there's only eight episodes. We only watched three. Babe, we're going to watch it as soon as you guys leave.
So you've watched all of them then?
No, we've watched three episodes.
Okay.
I've seen 3 hours of this show, and I am. This is instantly one of my top maybe 10 of all time, and we'll see where it lands at the end.
Okay.
But it starts as an 80s nostalgia trip, and then it veers into very modern, like, adventure horror in a very intelligent way. So if you... And the only reason I'm really mentioning this is because I saw a lot of hype and discussion about it. I was like, what the fuck is the deal with the show? But now I get it. And, like, I got excited about Hemlock Grove. Nothing compared to this. That was just a hot mess. This is the real deal.
Which one is Hemlock Grove?
It's, like, vampires and werewolves. But not, I mean, it's not like Twilight. But it was Netflix doing some novel adaptation.
Was that the one with, like, the teenagers?
Yeah.
Sort of, it was like Twilight
meets, no. It was a lot. It was darker than Twilight.
Oh my god. One of my Twin Peaks.
Yeah. So there's a teen werewolf and a teen vampire.
Yeah, I think Mel watched a little bit. I watched like a little. I was like, no.
It was hyper violent and the gypsy stuff was interesting, but by the second season it fell apart and we haven't watched the third season. We're like, wow. It just got silly. You know what I mean? Like it just went too far. Yeah.
All right.
So, okay. I feel like I've gushed.
You have. And
everyone's homework.
We have a paper towel you can use to clean all that up.
So, we will have an article and perhaps supplementary material as well to post along with this podcast.
Yeah.
So, go check that out, listener.
If you're interested, if you're like, what's up with this Trump guy from an improv actor perspective?
Because you probably haven't read that one.
Yeah.
You probably read most of the others, but hey, we haven't likened him to Hitler once with that
theory. No.
So, there you go. I'm making a case for why you should read it.
Yeah.
Listener, not you. You probably read your own article already.
Eh.
I'll read the reviews about my article. I don't really feel like reading it. Smike. Don't buy what is it called?
Jeez. Should have picked up the box. This is all. the bottle is all in Chinese.
Ergo Taozhu.
Don't buy it.
Don't buy it. I cannot recommend this.
You can't. You've had two servings of it now. But
yeah, I've drunk twice as much as you, and I can safely say it really is not good.
Yeah, there are better things. Unless you're just like, I want the quickest way to get drunk.
Yeah,
because it's 56% alcohol.
If you don't have Wild Turkey,
I don't want to waste time.
In an easy reach, I guess this is a good way to go about it, but it just doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
If you want to get plastered and have it taste good, buy Cask Strength Redbreast.
Okay, there you go.
That's a great way to enjoy getting plastered and think, this tastes delicious. Oh my God, I can't feel my legs. I hope I can't feel my tongue soon because this tastes like shit. Anything to add?
No, only that we are buddies in space.
You are.
S. Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Carassi. Would you like to?
Oh, no. I talked enough today. Okay. I couldn't possibly.
I couldn't dare. Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Of course, tune in for the continuing adventures of Clint Westfall's Broda and the many other talented vlogcasters as part of Looking Forward, the Jason Clam 2020-2016 presidential race. I had a fever and I had chills.
Oh.
And I recorded a fairly funny segment with them. So we did a big group Skype.
So are you doing any more of your concoctions? Are you?
Yep. Well,
Might I suggest having
it has to be beer. It has to be beer and soda.
It could be beer, soda, and baijiu.
No, I have rules, Mike. I have standards with this. No, but I recorded a segment like with fever and chills. So like, if I seem shaken by anything they were saying, it's because I was like trying not to shiver.
But you really were physically sick.
Oh, I was physically okay. Like, yeah, I got.
No, you weren't just acting like.
No, I had like a third world illness last week.
Oh, wow.
My 2-year streak of not being sick firmly ended. Mm. It was bad. I like slept for like 12 hours that night.
I'm sorry. You seem like fine.
I'm great now. Yeah, I got through it. But yeah.
Yeah. Go read Impro.
Yeah, read Impro. And then read Truth and Comedy. Read Impro and Truth and Comedy, and you'll have a pretty solid understanding of improv, intellectually.
Yeah. But if you're just going to read one, read Impro.
Oh, I would say read Truth and Comedy. It's far more entertaining.
I don't think so.
Have you read them both?
Yeah, okay. Truth and Comedy is more entertaining because they like drop names like, oh, this is that SNL actor you like.
Well, it's funny. It's like a funny book. Impro is really heady.
Impro is engaging, though.
It's engaging and intellectually stimulating, but Impro is easier. Truth and Comedy is easier to read and it's funnier.
I guess.
This is America. If you want to read Impro, go to England and be smart and shit. Fucking communist. I don't know. Whatever England is. Brexit. Eat my brain. Yeah, yeah.